Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, there is a time to embrace hills, believe it or not. And the person who wrote this week's main story is going to talk about just that. And then we talked about drug cheats a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to talk about them again today, just in a more specific and kind of try to put all that in perspective. And let's see if I can pull that off today. So, and joining me for those stories and a whole lot more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
So, Dean, I need to throw a congratulations out to someone. I need to throw a congratulations out to my wife.
Yeah.
She has put up with me now for 26 years today.
So oh, wow.
It's our anniversary
Happy
today.
Anniversary.
So, yeah. She's a trooper.
Yeah, she is.
Man, I'm about as bipolar and, you know, I've had all the things through the years, ADD, all the acronyms. So she's a steady rock, much like Debbie. You know,
yeah.
We outkicked our coverage.
Yes,
no
we did.
Questions.
Yes,
so.
We did.
Happy anniversary, Holly.
And congratulations to you too.
Yeah.
It's always, and I'm sure you guys get it. I'm sure people have said to you guys are the picture of a healthy marriage.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's work.
It is work, but it is a healthy marriage.
Sure,
as well.
It is. Yeah.
It's a very
no question.
And it's biblically based where it needs to be. And it's always great to hear people say that.
But it's not easy. I feel like there's this narrative written today that, you know, it should be easy. Of course, it's about everything, but we're not going to go down that rabbit trail. But it's work.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
It's totally worth it. Totally worth it. Yep. Well, we've had a cool week this week, haven't we?
Oh, man, yeah.
August in the 70s. It's crazy.
In the low 60s a few mornings.
It's been beautiful in the mornings.
A breath of fresh air. So it really makes you get ready for fall. Of course, we're going to have some 100-degree days whack us upside the head. Into September around here, it can get those spikes can sneak up on you.
Absolutely.
Now, whoa, where'd that come from? The trees are changing. It's not supposed to be 90 degrees, but welcome to the South.
Well, you know, I ran a 20-mile run on a Saturday morning recently,
yeah.
Which I haven't run a really good long run in several weeks.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was cooler. I mean, right. It was in the 70s. And my good, I finished with my last three miles really fast. I wanted to push it a little bit at the end of that. I felt really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, the good thing about this is having this cold snap in the middle of a summertime where it's hot is that I now know for sure, 100% positive, it's the heat. It's the heat that's causing me the trouble. So keep that in mind. If you get a cold snap or a cooler few days and you feel great, realize that's the difference.
Well, I mean, that's what we're going to talk about in John Sandifer's run here, this long run coming up. But it's, you know, we live in the poor man's altitude here.
That's
what
right.
We call it. The humidity is the great equalizer.
Yeah, you know, I did a workout yesterday morning and it was, I think it was in the high 60s when I started.
Yeah.
And I was still dripping with sweat because the humidity was like 92%.
Yeah.
But it felt good still.
Yeah.
Our post of the week, as you said, comes from John Sandifer. This is entitled From Strava, Saturday Long Run. Finally, a break in the recent suffocating heat and humidity. I actually felt like I was running again instead of just slogging through the muggy heat. But that recent slogging must be paying off as I was able to stretch the miles and ended feeling relatively strong instead of totally wasted like some of my recent runs. Slow, hard summer running equals fast fall. I hope that holds this year. Again, remember that the next time it gets oppressively hot, remember how different it feels to run in the cool weather. That helps me sometimes. I think about how I feel when it's wintertime during the summer And I realized this is temporary.
Yeah.
This is going away at some point in time. Maybe it's a month or two later, but it's going away.
Yeah.
And it helps me. I don't know. But it's been a nice break this week, for sure.
Yeah. I just noticed under John's name, it says Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Is that Mayberry? Mount Pleasant?
No. No, that's Mount Airy.
Mount Airy. Okay. Yeah.
Mount Pleasant, sorry. South Carolina. He lives out near,
Mount Airy, North Carolina.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, he lives around the old city in... I'm having a hard time with names the last 24 hours. The one we think about when you think about South Carolina.
Charleston.
Mm. Yeah, he lives near Charleston.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Well, as you said, it's going to get back to being hot.
Yeah.
But it's totally worth it because running in this heat, as John points out, does pay off in the summertime.
Sure.
As your blood is, you're accumulating a better base of blood in your system, and that's going to pay off with better oxygen transport in the wintertime. And this fall, if you'll get out there, because I see, we've talked about this before, the sidewalks are empty during the summer because nobody wants to get out there in the heat. But if you'll do it, it'll make your fall absolutely glorious.
Yeah, I had another one of those phone calls yesterday. I was out rucking, and you know, I ruck on Lake Francis Road, which is a little two-lane country road. And it's like if I'm just out there walking or especially running, nobody pays any attention to you. But the minute you put that backpack on, everybody thinks I'm homeless. I've had this one particular old man has stopped twice now and asked me if I needed a ride. And then yesterday, Holly Kimsey, who knows exactly what we do and what I do, and I was way down Lake Francis Road and I saw her pass by and she called me. She said, "Do you need a ride?" I'm like, "Holly, no, I don't need a ride. I just got weight on my back. That's the backpack."
Yeah, I think people probably don't think about that being weight, though. They probably think you have something in your back and you're headed somewhere.
Well, I come home and Holly said, "Yep, Holly thinks I've kicked you out of the house now and you're walking with your backpack."
Yeah, that's funny. Our run of the week comes from Mike Powers, but it's not about Mike Powers. Mm-hmm. He says, "When I woke up this morning, it was in the 60s. It was a beautiful morning. I ran 6.2 miles. I ran a couple of those miles with my wife, Heather Brown Pitt Powers. She is getting back to running after not having run in a long while. I just wanted to say I am so proud of Heather and the hard work she has put into running again. Hmm. You are doing great, Heather. I am proud of you."
Hmm.
Again, a nice weather thing, but this... I thought it would be good to lift Heather up here because we've all been there where we have to start over and we have to get going again. And it is really difficult to get going again after you stop. But the other thing we're just talking about, yeah, wives and things.
Sure.
It's great to see husbands supporting wives, mm-hmm, and vice versa.
Sure.
And so I love to see that. You know, my wife does she gets her 10,000 steps in every day, no matter what.
Right.
She's been doing that for years now,
mm-hmm,
and it pays off for her.
Sure.
So,
we talked about, we were on a different podcast yesterday and we were talking about the idea of consistency. Consistency far outweighs, outtrumps, outdoes anything as far as training goes. You can have the best training plan, you can have the best running form, you can have all the best gadgets. But the question is, but did you get your workouts in?
Yeah.
And if you didn't, it's all worth nothing.
Yep.
Consistency by far will make you faster, stronger, better than anything else in your arsenal.
Yep. So yeah, the person who runs 3 miles a day, 5 days a week, will be every single week over the course of a year, will be in better shape than somebody who runs 40 miles some weeks and then 10 miles other weeks or 0 miles other weeks.
Well, yeah, or put that kind of in more stark perspective, the person that runs 3 miles 3 times a week will be in better physical and conditional health-wise shape than the person that trains for a half marathon once a year.
Yeah.
And so kind of that's kind of what we're saying. It's the same thing with our walk with Christ. It's the same thing. I mean, think about your job. If you're not consistent in your job, what's going to happen?
Yeah, it's true.
Boss man, I'm sorry I missed 2 days last week. That's not going to go over well.
No, it's not. So, as it relates to this particular post, good job, Heather, and good job, Mike, for recognizing her for what she's doing. Our trivia question from last week. Dean Karnazes has run marathons in all 50 states, like many others have done. But what made his 50 marathons in 50 states even more impressive than anyone else's? And you knew the answer to this.
Yeah.
He did it in 50 days.
Yeah.
50 marathons, 50 days, 50 states. That's a logistic tough thing to do.
But, you know, when you hear it, this is the thing I was thinking about this morning when I was reading through this. When you hear it, your knee jerk is, well, I mean, that's impressive, but it's not crazy impressive. It's crazy impressive.
Yes.
It is. If you really start breaking down, just try to travel to 50 states in 50 days.
Including Hawaii and Alaska.
Right.
Yeah.
Try that. And then throw a marathon in each one.
It's, Yeah, for sure. So he has written a book about it called 50-50. Mm-hmm. It's co-authored by Matt Fitzgerald, who has written a lot of great endurance-related books. So in the book, he talks about the adventure that he was on doing this, but he also gives a lot of practical tips. It's different than most of Dean's books are. They're kind of inspirational. He's kind of a motivational kind of guy, but this one has some practical advice in it as well. And so it's a good book. If you'd like to check that out.
Sure.
This is interesting because if you run 50 marathons in 50 states, obviously you can't run a regular marathon, organized marathon with a bunch of other people.
Right.
And so he ran a lot of marathon courses that are regular marathon courses, but he had to do that kind of on his own.
Right.
Although he had a lot of people who would just come from that area and join him for that marathon for that day. Wouldn't that be so much fun to get out there every day and just run with a different group of people every day?
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of this guy that's walking across America that, you know, I'm still following him on social media. And every day he's got two or three people that show up and walk some with him. And that would be fun. The unstructuredness of that, I don't know, that might be hard on me after a little while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of freedom in that too.
Yeah, there would be.
That would be kind of cool.
Yep. So if there's anybody out there that wants to bankroll it, I'd be happy to do this myself.
I'll plan it. I'll drive.
Yeah.
RV.
Yeah, you're good at that.
Yeah.
I mean, logistics
stuff. I'll even run with you some.
Yeah.
Maybe every fifth one.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be fun.
Let you get four or five under your belt, wear you down a little bit.
Yeah. That would be fun.
I wonder how quickly, like if you went out today, and I'm not saying run them fast. Let's say for you, a 4-hour marathon would be slow. How many days do you think it would be before you really started? Like, how many days would it be before 4-hour marathon started to feel tough?
Yeah, I don't know.
How many days do you think it would take you?
I've thought about that.
Because, I mean, your first one, 4 hours, is like, that's no big deal.
Right.
But is it the 6th, 8th, 10th, 15th? I don't know.
It's a really good question.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think just running 100 miles in a week is a big deal, and you get pretty sore and tired after running 100 miles a week. Of course, that's at a regular pace.
Yeah.
But
you hit it in 4 days.
Yeah.
There's that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I would think by the third day, it would start to get tough.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would think you would level off at some point where it got to feel kind of routine.
Yeah.
And then
4 hours is what, a 9-minute pace? Do you think you could do all 50 at a 9-minute pace?
I do.
You do?
Yeah, I do. But I think there would be a point in time somewhere in the, I don't know, 20 something, maybe 30th marathon, where it would, you'd have to push a little bit to run at that pace.
Because that's what, over 1,000 miles in 50 days.
Yeah.
Whew.
It sounds epic. Like more the more you think about it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It would be fun.
I'll stick to the logistics, Dean.
Okay.
You find us some funding. I'll do the logistics and RV driving.
All right.
You run.
We're on.
Just find that funder.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you've got a bunch of money burning a hole in your pocket and you need somebody to, you know, we'll be glad to.
We'll tell a lot of people about Jesus along the way too.
Yes, we will. We will. We'll wear messages. We'll do whatever. Sure. Yeah, that would be great fun. Yeah. And that would be so much fun.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back, and we need stories. Please, if you're out there, and especially if you're new to Upward Running, you probably have a neat story.
We've had a whole group of people just graduate the 5K challenge.
That's right.
I mean, we've had like 30, 35 classes who have now completed the 5K challenge. So we've got hundreds of people, I know, listening to this, that have a story.
Yeah.
A very recent, raw story, probably.
Yeah.
We need to hear those.
Yes. So please, we want to hear it. Come on, send it in. This story comes from The Running Week, and it says, meet the 93-year-old marathoner redefining what aging looks like. This is crazy. Mathea Allen Smith isn't your typical 93-year-old. At 92 years and 194 days old, Mathea officially became the oldest woman to finish a marathon, earning her a spot in the Guinness World Records. She crossed the finish line at the 2022 Honolulu Marathon in 11 hours, 19 minutes, and 49 seconds, proving that grit doesn't retire. It sent a powerful message about aging, resilience, and the human spirit. From her home in Koloa, Hawaii, Mathea is joining the world that it's never is showing the world that it's never too late to chase big goals and create lasting legacies. It's pretty cool. She didn't start running until she was 46 years old.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Have we talked about Mathea before? I feel like we have.
Have we?
I want to say we have, but some of this sounded familiar. But man, this reminds me of my great aunt. I mean, my great aunt is in her 90s and she looks 50.
Yeah.
And she acts 50.
Yeah.
And it's because she gets out and exercises.
That's right.
This is what a cool lady.
Yeah. I think we talked about her when we talked about the oldest marathoner.
Maybe we did.
We brought her name up.
We remember the name.
No details.
Yeah, but for sure.
I saw this. She says she runs 6 days a week, totaling about 36 miles every week, even now at 93 years old. She talks about finding joy in the moment. She especially loves this Honolulu Marathon because there's no time limit, and sure, she likes just being able to do it at whatever pace she wants to do it. She talks about nutrition mm-hmm. being a cornerstone of her lifestyle mm-hmm. and that has been something that's been important to her, and she tries to avoid ultra-processed foods. So she says, I don't eat junk is the way she puts it.
Mm-hmm.
She says she counts calories and she tracks her micronutrients. So she makes sure, and she makes sure their weight stays consistent. She thinks that's important. And she says, rain or shine, no matter what, she gets out there. She says she never uses age as an excuse. And she gets out there, back to that word we just talked about,
consistency. That's my favorite part of her story here is, and she even says, rain or shine.
Yep.
We can all take some notes from that.
Yep. And she says, it's not about speed, it's about showing up.
Right.
And that's so important. She talks about, I never wear new clothes or shoes on race day.
She says her shoes, she runs 200 miles on her shoes before she ever uses them in a race.
Yeah.
We can all learn something from that. I mean, how many people do you know that bought brand new shoes the night before the race?
Yeah, that's true. It's true. I've done that.
Yeah.
And she talks about living in the now. She approaches everything 1 mile at a time, focuses on what's going on right now, doesn't worry about what's happening tomorrow or yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that's, hey, we can all, again, that's a good message for all of us. So 93 years old, she's still going strong. She eats well. She lives in Hawaii, which is not known for cool weather.
Right.
And so she runs out there. It's not that easy
to
run.
But the great thing about Hawaii is it's moderate temperatures and it's all year long.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It never gets crazy. It's not like Georgia.
Yep. Doesn't get crazy hot and it doesn't get crazy cold.
Right.
And so, yeah, I guess there's something to that consistency in the weather.
She's acclimated all year long.
That's true. Yeah.
But what I love about her is it seems like everything she does has a purpose. And there's a routine to her life, which is, I mean, you know how I am. That's very appealing. I guarantee you. She almost comes across as all the acronyms if you meet her.
Yeah.
I bet she's very regimented. She's going to do the same thing at the same time every day.
Yeah.
If I had my guesses.
Probably so.
Yeah.
6 miles a day, 6 days a week. To me, just
saying that. That's yes, that's great.
Yes. And she takes that day off every week. Yeah. And that would be hard for me to take one day off every week, mm-hmm. I think. So,
but your routine is running every day. Her routine is I run 6 days.
Yeah. Well, it's got to feel weird to not do the routine thing that she does every other day, 6 days a week, to not do that one day. You know?
It's the rhythm of her week, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense. I'm inspired by her.
Sure.
I think it's great. Good job, Mathea. Well, this week's story is about something that happened 12 years ago. How do you feel about hills? I know how I feel about them. It's not a real positive thought that pops in my head when I think about hills. Well, maybe you'll feel a little bit better after this week's story. This is from Hannah Jones from East Bend, North Carolina. She writes a story called Run Uphill. The first 30 minutes of January 1st, 2013 was an amazing experience for me. I ran my first 5K with my husband. We started at midnight and ran through the Christmas lights at the local park's Festival of Lights. The scenery was beautiful, my adrenaline was high, and I was thrilled to be starting a new year with a new and healthy lifestyle. One of the most memorable parts of my run was when I ran uphill. There were two tough hills near the end of the race. Much of the people around me either slowed their run or started walking. I was tired, almost out of breath, but determined. The hills were hard, but apparently not as hard for me as for others. I was able to pass several people on those hills just because I kept running. It was an incredible feeling. After the race, I decided to make that my motto, run uphill. I later had it engraved on my wristband along with my personal emergency information. Sometimes I look down at it or just remember that it's there while I'm struggling during one of my runs. It encourages me to keep running no matter how hard the hill is. These two words are great motivation to me because I like to be challenged and hills are my challenge. However, run uphill is more than a running motto. It has also become my life motto. One reason that I was able to pass other runners on those hills was that 90% of my training had been completely uphill. I trained primarily on a treadmill. I had set it at an incline when I first started to run. Though small and slow, every step I took was uphill. My husband hadn't trained this way. Much of his training was outdoors on flat roads. Even though he had already participated in a few 5Ks and usually had better endurance than me, the hills in this race were what set us apart. He had to stop and walk, but I kept going. I realize that I am in training for my Christian life every day. I train by studying the Bible, spending time with God in prayer, and learning from other believers. I train in a controlled environment, but I don't know what hills or difficulties will come my way next. I should not skimp on my training. Instead, I should make sure that my training is top-notch and that it is always propelling me upward and forward. The more I learn about God and the more in tune I am with his voice, the easier it will be to rely on his strength and be able to conquer the trials and battles of life. I should train diligently and then run with confidence, both physically and spiritually. While we shouldn't be in spiritual competition with other believers, it's easy to tell that there are Christians who live more victoriously than others. Often the hills of life, trials and difficulties, are the events that distinguish the victorious Christians from the defeated Christians. Thankfully, we don't have to rely on our own power to conquer those hills. God supplies us with the power we need, but we still have to fight the good fight of faith and run our own race. I had to put forth some extra effort to get up those hills in that 5K. I later made a list of some ways I can put forth the effort to run uphill in other real-life situations. To me, running uphill means to try harder than normal, to do right when wrong is easier, to get out of my comfort zone and get the job done, to accept the challenge, take responsibility, and be a leader, to not be passive but active, to not let others drag me down, to have a confident, optimistic attitude, to look to Jesus who endured the cross and the shame that he despised because he knew the joy that would come at its completion.
Do hard things.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this story.
Man, yeah.
Yeah. Embrace the hills is what she's saying. Which is what? That's James, right out of James, right?
Sure.
It doesn't say embrace the hills, but it does say embrace the hills. Mm-hmm. and not only that, but she's talking about how she trained for those hills.
Right.
And that's interesting. Even though she had no hills to train on,
yeah,
she trained for the hills.
Yeah.
Which I think that's a whole different story.
Sure, that's a whole sermon right there.
It is. She has an answer for us when we face tough things. She has an answer for us when we're trying to make excuses about not being ready for those tough things. Mm-hmm. And again, how did she do it? She counted it as joy to mm-hmm. face those hills. So much so that she had it engraved mm-hmm. on something that she wore with her and she could look at it anytime.
Sure.
It's great. What many of us do, we probably are all guilty of this at one time or another, is to wish we had trained on those hills mm-hmm. when we're in the middle of the hill in the race. Whenever we face that tough thing, we wish we had spent more time in our Bible and more time in prayer. And the way to avoid that is to realize today that no matter what happens, the hills are coming. Mm-hmm. So train for them. Train for them now. Read your Bible. Study it. Spend time in prayer, and when the hills come, they will be easier to get up.
How do we convey this to Landon and I? Landon and I actually ate breakfast together this morning, my youngest son, and we were kind of talking about this very thing. You know, he's wired very different. Landon doesn't do, he really doesn't do social media. I mean, he has it, but he's never on his phone. Doesn't have a TV in his room, nor does he want a TV in his room. And so we were talking this morning about how he looks at things, which is, I feel like that's how we raised him, to look at media and our phones and social media. But he's taking it much further than we even raised him. He's kind of doubled down, and he was talking about it's just noise. And he used those words this morning. But we were talking about, he goes to his friends, and they're all on their phones and everything. And we were kind of talking about, he was questioning, how do you get them to see it? How do you get them to see? Because what he's saying is right. I listened to a podcast yesterday with Mark Hyman. The title of the podcast is "We're Scrolling Ourselves to Death," and it's kind of the same thing in our walk with Christ. We understand the benefit. Because we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're called to be a witness to others. And Landon's kind of doing the same thing with phones. I mean, he would love for his friends to kind of see it his way. I don't know. It was an interesting conversation to hear a 19-year-old struggle with how to, in essence, what it is to be a good example. To be a witness. Now, it's not for Christ. All of his friends, as far as I know, are great young men. They're Christian young men. But he's trying to influence them, and he's trying to figure out in his own way how to do that. And I think we do that in running. We don't, you know, where is the line? You know, it's, you see somebody that's overweight, they're diabetic, they're struggling with their health. And there's a line there where it's, we can't be judgmental, but yet we feel like we need to encourage them, not say something, because that has a judgmental connotation. But I don't know. It was a really interesting conversation with him this morning, as most conversations with him are.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, that was what I was thinking while you were telling that story. It was that it's just like running. We see those people that we want them to get the same joy for it,
sure,
that we have, because we know how good it will be for them. And yet they look at running and they think, that does not sound appealing to me. And for a lot of teenagers, not scrolling on social media.
A lot of adults.
Does not sound appealing to them. It sounds more appealing to spend some time doing that. And so, yeah, I don't know how you get people away from their kind of built-in thoughts, right? That's what we're talking about, is getting people away from their paradigm that they have.
Right.
Hebrews 12:1-2. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God.
So, crazy thing happened this weekend, Sunday. Charlie, my pastor, preached on Hebrews 12:1-3. And it turned into the Upward Running, Run for God sermon. You know, Holly was so glad that she was in the nursery, because she hates when, not hates, she gets real uncomfortable when Charlie starts talking about us. But he did something I've never heard him do. And so he preached on this scripture in a way that really got me uncomfortable. It really started to push me. And what he did was he preached on Hebrews 12, which is what I'm very comfortable with. You know, it's I'm comfortable. I know that scripture. I know the meaning behind that scripture. I feel like I have done that to some degree. And but what he did is he flipped the script. He started in 12, and then he went back to 11. And he started talking about the heroes of faith and how they did things that God was calling them to do, and there was a lot of uncertainty there. And man, it just got me, because there's always things that God is laying on your heart. And we'll get into this a little bit more, I think, in your commentary that's coming up right after this. But we feel like we did this thing that God called us to do, so we're good.
Yeah, that's true.
Not how it works.
No.
You got to go back to 11 and see Abraham and Moses. And they did the thing God was calling them to do today, and then they got up again the next day and did it again.
Yeah.
And it was constant. But we get comfortable, and we do that one thing that God called us to do, and we're like,
check it off.
We're done, God.
Yep.
And that's not how it works.
Yeah. That's a good point. Good point. I saw this response and I just loved it, because it was talking specifically about that phrase. And I always like to pick out a different portion of this every time we go over it, because we've done it so many times. And the phrase despising the shame says in Hebrews 12:2, the phrase describing Jesus as despising the shame refers to how he approached the suffering and humiliation of the cross. In context of the ancient world, crucifixion was not only a brutal and painful form of execution, but was also considered the most degrading, shameful way to die, marked by public humiliation, mockery, abandonment by friends, and exposure to scorn from onlookers. To be crucified was to be treated as utterly worthless and cursed. The Greek word translated despising means to think little of, to disregard, or to treat with contempt. In this context, despising the shame means that Jesus regarded the shame and the disgrace of the cross as insignificant when compared to the greater purpose that motivated him. The joy and glory set before him, which included fulfilling God's redemptive plan, securing the salvation of humanity, and being exalted at the right hand of God. Jesus did not ignore the reality of the pain or shame. However, he refused to let it dictate his actions or prevent him from fulfilling his mission. In effect, he scorned the shame. He endured it, but saw it as inconsequential in the light of the joy and victory that awaited him. His determination sets an example for believers to remain focused on God's purposes, even when facing ridicule or suffering. The lasting spiritual reward far outweighs any temporary disgrace or hardship. In summary, despising the shame means Jesus regarding the humiliation of the cross as beneath consideration, unworthy of deterring him from accomplishing his goal. He overcame shame through steadfast love, obedience, and focused on the ultimate joy and triumph that would follow his suffering. Hmm. Isn't that a powerful
thing? Yeah, it's very powerful.
Wow. We often, I think, don't do the right thing because there's an embarrassment in doing that right thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I think that we're afraid to bring up Jesus in a certain scenario because we're afraid of how people might view that, mm-hmm. or we're afraid that it's inappropriate or whatever the case may be. And we don't like to hear people come back at us or to ridicule us or to think of us as, you know, we've heard people say terrible things about Christians and the way, you know, they're small-minded and, you know, they're relying on, you know, something that is not real. And mm-hmm. we hear that stuff. And so it's hard but Jesus, I can't help but think about him. He's on the cross and he's saying, forgive them for they know not what they do. It's the same thing when we're in that situation. They don't know what they're doing. They don't understand.
So here's the take I had on after reading that and then reading kind of your commentary. I think I look at it a little bit different because think of what Jesus did. And you know, we're to model our lives after Jesus. So he took an event that was the most humiliating thing really a person can go through, being mm-hmm. crucified on a cross. I mean, whatever we see depicted in movies or pictures of what the cross looked like, it was a lot more humiliating than that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. He probably didn't have anything covering anything. I mean, he was out there for everybody to see, and it was, but he took the most humiliating thing that you could think of at that time, and he made it the center of his ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that tell me? You know, I think about the mistakes. Now, Jesus, it wasn't a mistake. But what kind of rises to that level in our lives is mistakes
mm-hmm.
we've made in the past. There's shame. We don't want to talk about it. I've talked openly on here about my almost my financial collapse back in the housing crisis in 2008. That there's a lot of shame there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was mistakes made. There was things I shouldn't have done. Got myself into situations I shouldn't have done. All in the name of greed, if I'm being honest. And it would be easy to file that away and never speak of it again. But that's not what we're supposed to do, because there is somebody out there right now who's walking exactly where I was walking 3 months before the housing collapse.
That's right.
And we are called to, I don't know how to explain how our relationship with that should be, but the relationship should not be to cover it up. We should despise the shame. There is shame there, but we're going to disregard it because all things can work to the good of those who believe in Christ, including financial calamity. It could be infidelity. How many people use infidelity in their testimony?
Yeah.
It's part of their testimony. Alcoholism, drug abuse, all these, some of the most powerful testimonies that you hear. Paul, I mean, David in the Bible, all of these despise the shame of whatever it is they did. It's not excusing what they did, but it's allowing God to use that as a powerful testimony in their life, because what the devil will mean for shame, what the devil use for shame, is the opportunity for us to say, but God.
Yeah.
And there's that 180, and that's the important part. Take what you feel like is shameful in your life, and I'm not going to say be proud of it.
Right.
I'm not proud that I almost lost everything. But looking back, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
That changed me.
Yeah.
And it changed me for the good. And so all I'm trying to encourage you with is whatever your past is, it's why these stories are so powerful. Because most every story we read is somebody despising the shame.
Yeah.
And
that's a good
point. I just want to encourage you, take that thing that maybe you've tried to hide and you're ashamed of, and consider that there's somebody else out there who might need to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I went through something. I'm still going through that thing. A lot of times these things that we do, they kind of happen and then they're kind of over with, and then you just move on.
You don't want to think about it.
You don't want to think about it, but you have the ability to move on. Well, the thing that happened to me, which I won't go into, is still lingering out there, right? And it's something I had nothing in my heart made me want to. It was not a misunderstanding. It was a thing that I said that I shouldn't have said, but I was trying to be funny at the time.
We usually go off the rails.
Yeah. And I really was. And I thought it was, but I didn't think about the way that it could impact somebody. And that thing still is an awkward thing because of something I said that I wish I could take back, but I can't. Yeah. But what I can do moving forward is not try to go back and try. I said what I said. I apologized and all of that, right? Going forward, the best thing that I can do is just to be the best representation of Christ that I can be to the people that were affected by that. Mm-hmm. I could make all sorts of excuses. I could go and tell this same story that, well, I didn't mean it the way that it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. What I can do is say, from a Christian standpoint, I'm going to handle this in the way that Jesus would handle it. 2 Timothy 2:15, be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. I kind of want to expand that reading. This is a good scripture, but let's talk about it a little bit before and after that. From verses 14 through 16, it says, keep reminding God's people of these things. Warn them before God against quarreling about words. It is of no value and only ruins those who listen. Do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who does not need to be ashamed and who correctly handles the word of truth. Avoid godless chatter, because those who indulge in it will become more and more ungodly. And then it goes on to say in verse 21, those who cleanse themselves from the latter will be instruments for special purposes, made holy, useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work. How applicable is this to today? Mm-hmm. My goodness, this is so applicable. We can't be vessels for God. We can't do what we are called to do if we're busy arguing about silly details and about politics or about whatever the little thing is. We just can't do it. We have to. There's a place for that sometimes. Mm-hmm. There's a place for friendly banter. Mm-hmm. There is a place for debate at times. But it has to be the right time. And very often, we do it when it's not the right time.
We want to win the debate.
Yes.
And many times,
at all costs.
Many times winning the debate is not engaging in it.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is one of the areas I hope maybe you or my wife will say different, but I hope that this is an area where 20 years ago, I had to be right. And I had everybody, I needed for everybody to know that I was right. I feel like that's where God has worked on me.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
maybe it's a little more vain than that, in that I don't care if you think I'm right at this point. Maybe it's gone a little too far that way. But I don't know. I guess maybe through the years I have heard other people engage like I would one time engage. And it was very convicting to hear somebody else doing it. And you're like, mm-hmm. Is that what I sound like?
Yeah.
And the answer was yes.
Yeah.
And that's a hard pill to swallow, but it's a necessary pill to swallow if that's you. I think there's a lot of people who just aren't wired that way. Yeah. And I admire for that. They're just people who, I remember having debates with people 20, 25 years ago, and I would be trying to argue something. Looking back now, I know I was wrong in what I was saying. They wouldn't respond. They would just kind of look at me and say, okay.
Yeah.
I think there's somewhere in the Bible where it says heap coals on their head.
Yeah.
I mean, that is exactly, there's so much wisdom in that. And I feel like for you and me both, I think we're both this way. That's where I feel like, I hope others would agree that that's where God has worked on me the most, because there was a lot to chisel off there.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot to work with.
Me too. There were blocks that had to be cut out.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the whole idea, is just to keep trying to get better at those things. And if we're, again, this scripture says we can't be effective for God until we begin to chisel those things away. And so thank God that he has been doing that for both of us. 1 Corinthians 15:57, but thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. And this is the whole point, right? Mm-hmm. We are victorious. It doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter what people say. It doesn't matter about arguments and politics and all of that stuff. What matters is we are victorious in the end. And we know that. Mm-hmm. And so with that confidence, why are we engaging in these things we shouldn't do? It makes no sense, really.
Yeah.
Logically, when you think about it, and you and I are both very logical people, mm-hmm. when you think about it logically from that standpoint, you feel stupid when you think, why am I engaging this person when clearly that's not doing anything good for me or for them or for anybody else? Yeah. You know, there was a kind of an altercation recently at the USA Championships. A lot of people saw the Noah Lyles and Kenny Bednarik. Noah turns his head and is kind of being a smart aleck to Kenny as they're finishing the race. He beats him, and Kenny hadn't lost all year, and I'm sure that was frustrating to Kenny to see it. And so Kenny gives him a shove after the race, and I think then all of a sudden they realize that, oh my goodness, there's cameras on us. And so they start to try to...
I think Kenny realized that. Kenny, I don't know that it. Noah realized.
I think you're right.
I don't think Noah cared.
Yeah, yeah. But Kenny goes up to Noah and tries to... He holds his hand out, but Noah kind of rejects it a little bit at first. I don't know. Hopefully they'll be okay. But a couple observations from this. First, we should never gloat over the fact that we're victorious.
Sure.
That should not be a ha 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 ha, I'm going to heaven and you're not. That's an inappropriate way to do things.
We need to make that the lead into this podcast,
which is what Noah was doing.
Sure,
Noah was gloating about his victory. And then second, when we realize that we've done something that is not in the will of God, we should immediately do what Kenny did. We should immediately say, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have done that. Let me try to reconcile that as quickly as I can.
Sure.
Right? That just, and why would we do that? Well, because we've won.
Yeah.
We've won. And what we want people to do is we want everybody to win, and it doesn't help when we gloat over our victory. Mm-hmm. A question Is your spiritual training intense enough to prepare you for life's battles? How could you kick it up a notch? I think sometimes mine is, and sometimes it's not. It's easy to feel guilty about a lot of things sometimes. Sometimes I think, what if I was as dedicated to Bible study, not just reading my Bible, but real Bible study as I am to my running? Mm-hmm. What if I spent as much time doing it as I do my running? Because I run probably on average an hour a day. Mm-hmm. What if I spent a full hour every day, again, not just reading, but really studying and diving into the scriptures? It's pretty convicting when I think about that.
Yeah, and I don't know why, and I need to send this to Denise Ziegler because I'm talking about her here, but you've heard me mention Denise Ziegler before. She was in my very first Run for God class, and I'll never forget, she came up to me one time and said, "Mitchell, when is running going to get easier?" And kind of in her, the sassiness of Denise, it was just funny to see. And I remember explaining, you know, Denise, we were at week 8. We were on the 20-minute run, I think. And I said, "Denise, if I point back to week 1 and I ask you to run 60 seconds, what would you think about that?" She said, "Well, that would be easy." And I said, "Then 60 seconds got easier." The reason I make that point is I feel like in our walk with Christ, we need to flip the script on that. We need to be asking ourselves, what are we doing to make this harder? What are we doing to stretch ourselves? And I think back, you know, for years, my quiet time was very, it's a prayer, it's a verse, maybe it's something that pops up on an app, which are all great. I mean, there's nothing wrong. Don't hear me degrading anything. But we need to continually push ourselves. You know, I went from that to, you know, I would come in here and I would study every morning, and it would, you know, be several minutes, you know. I'm ashamed to even say that. And then it got to where, you know, I've got two computer screens staring at me and I've got a phone buzzing. It, you know, no matter how early I got in here, to where now, I think I've mentioned on here, I take an hour every morning now, and I walk down to a little, I call it the treehouse. It's a hunting stand, but it's got a roof on it. And I go down there, and I don't take a phone. I have a Bible that stays down there in a notepad. And for me, that is training. It's looking at training. Mm-hmm. I'm not patting myself on the back because I fail every day. So I'm just telling you my example in my life, that I'm trying to look at my walk with Christ as we look at training, because early on, I mean, think about when you were a baby, you drink milk.
Yeah.
And today we eat meat. And all these illustrations, all these analogies, we need to be applying, because at the end of the day, that's the purpose of this whole ministry, right?
Yep.
Is to draw the parallel of our walk with Christ in the sport of running. But like I've said so many times on here, we get it over here. We get the hard thing equals a good result. But so many times, just like in Charlie's message on Sunday, which really convicted me, that so many times in our walk, we get that 60-second run and we're like, "Man, I am a runner now."
Yeah.
If 60 seconds is hard for you, you're becoming a runner. If 60 seconds is easy for you, you're not a runner. And that's not saying that you're not a Christian if you're not doing 5 hours of study a day. Point being is, we need to be pushing we need to run uphill.
Yep.
As the story suggested, we need to do hard things. We need to be but I feel like in our walk with Christ, we can get comfortable. Yep. And we need to go back to Hebrews 11. We love reading 12.
Yeah.
We need to go back to 11 sometimes and say, where is God pushing you? Where is he calling you to get uncomfortable? And we need to go there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good example. What spiritual hills have you faced lately? How could you have been better prepared? This one's super individualistic, obviously. And I've got a fairly personal example here, and I'll share this. I don't know that I've shared this with anybody, but, you know, I teach a small group, a Sunday school class, if you like to call it that. My class was way too big this time last year. Mm-hmm. We had so many people in there. We were having to pull extra chairs in, and there wasn't really enough room in the room for us. But today it shrunk back to kind of a normal size, and there's a lot of different reasons for it. A lot of those people are going in there helping in other areas and other things, but there are other reasons for it. And one of the reasons is that there's a small group of ladies that were in the class that clearly did not like us walking through the Chosen, mm-hmm. the show. That's what we were doing for our class. And so they have kind of left. They've left the class. Actually, some of them have now not left the church. And I beat myself up for it a pretty good bit for a while. I thought it's all my fault. I'm not doing things that God has led me to do, because obviously he wouldn't want my class to shrink, mm-hmm. right? Why would he do that? And so the truth is, the reason for all of that was there are some fundamental disagreements between what they believe and what I believe. Nothing that is related to our salvation, mm-hmm. but just doctrinal things that I don't completely agree with the things they believe, and I don't know that they think that I go far enough in some of the things that I believe. But the bottom line is that I'm not saying they're wrong and I'm right. I think we're both right, mm-hmm. in different ways. But the point is that talk about hills. That was a big hill. It got to the point where I actually asked somebody if they would like to take over my Sunday school class that I have taught for years, mm-hmm. because I was just at that point where I was like, I'm not adequate. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing a good enough job, obviously. And the truth was not, that was not the truth.
Sure.
But that was a pretty serious hill to climb.
Yeah. I mean, I think as church people, we confuse the message with the method many times.
Yeah.
We say the message should not change, and therefore the method in which we deliver the message should never change. And I deeply disagree with that. I've given the example of the Billy Graham from the mm-hmm. 50s and watching a Will Graham crusade from today. It's vastly different. And correct. The message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, we can't change that one tittle. We can't mess with that. But the method, we should absolutely, and I love hearing of ministries that are kind of thinking outside the box, taking the Chosen, which is culturally been a great thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I fully believe that. Now, is everything spot on to what the Bible say it? I mean, did Jesus really chicken fight in the Sea of Galilee? I don't know. So they take some liberties with some things, but that is not taking away from the message, which they nail.
Yes.
And I mean, I look at other ministries that people criticize, and they're not criticizing the message. They're criticizing the method. And that is where I feel like we mess up as believers. We mess up. This is where I talk about the friendly fire many times. Mm-hmm. We've had people criticize us.
Yeah.
What? That is so wrong to be using running as a ministry. No. I will not back down from that.
Nope.
We need to take everywhere people are. Jesus had dinner with sinners and tax collectors. He went to places where they were and he met them where they are. People are in all different places other than the church right now. And we should be drawing them to the church. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But sometimes we got to go where people are and say, hey, we have this, back to the conversation with Landon this morning. We're advocates for Christ. What do advocates do? They don't sit where they are and just advocate. They go to where people are and they advocate for what they believe. you know, we 2 Corinthians 5:20, we are ambassadors for Christ. That was drilled into me as an RA when I was young.
Yeah.
Ambassadorship, what do? The UN ambassador to Egypt, do they live in the United States? No. They go to Egypt.
Yeah.
And they lobby on the behalf of the United States. They advocate for the United States. And that's what we are to do. So whether you're doing it as a chosen Bible study or the sport of running or bunco that Gay loves to play or a hunting ministry, I love to see other ministries because that is where we go meet people where they are and say, let me tell you about my Jesus.
Yep.
There is nothing wrong with that. And when you start throwing stones at the method, if the message is right, if you're throwing stones at the method, I firmly believe and am convicted that's friendly fire. And yeah. You need to stop it.
Good point. Good point.
Last question. What does running uphill mean to you?
Hard.
Yeah. Well, why is running uphill hard? It's because gravity is working against you, right? There's nothing you can do except fight against it, trying to get to higher ground with each step. And spiritually, the things that come up that you have no control over are like those hills. And they're coming, and you don't have control over the hill. You know, when you're running on a particular road and there's a hill there, you either go all over the hill or you turn around and you go back where you came from. And that's not a good option very often. Mm-hmm. And when we're in our spiritual journey, hills are going to come up, and you're going to have to go over those hills. And you don't have the ability to flatten out that hill. And so that's why he talks about count it all joy. That's why James says count it all joy, because you have an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. You can look at that disagreement that you're having with somebody as a big hill to go over, or you can look at it as an opportunity to be an advocate for Christ. Mm-hmm. And to do it in a way that will put a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. Which are you going to do?
And where this differs and where we got to be careful is in a race. Let's use the analogy. In a race, we can argue, well, everybody's got to run up that hill. But this thing I'm dealing with in my personal life, not everybody's having to deal with that. Therefore, God, this isn't fair. They've got other hills.
That's right.
And you don't know about them.
That's right.
Everybody, we all have our hills, and they're all just as monumental as the next person. You may have zero money and dealing with poverty, and that's your hill. But guess what? The wealthiest people on this globe have hills much bigger than we do as paupers in their eyes. I mean, is that the right word? Pauper?
Pauper.
Yeah. In the big scheme of things, we're nothing to those people. We're poor. But I have very different hills, and they have very different hills, and they're all monumental.
Yep.
And so don't use that. You know, everybody's got to run it in a race. Well, we're all running them in life.
Yeah, good point.
Upward Running is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness and faith journeys. You get these weekly podcasts, but there's so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there too. If you're not a member, join today at upwardrunning.com. It is the best value you'll find to fuel both your faith and your fitness. All right, we're back. I got this article from Canadian Running. It talks about Vancouver man runs marathon to 5 Costcos in hot dog costume.
That's about as creative as you can get.
That's pretty creative. So this guy, his name is Amir Nikravan, decided to run from Costco to Costco, 5 different Costcos in the city of Vancouver. And that's a lot of Costcos in one
city.
That's
what I was thinking. I mean, we have one within, 100 miles of I mean,
yeah,
ours are like 100 miles apart.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that there are a bunch of them. So he ran like, I think it was 43K or about 27 miles, I guess, through the town, stopped at each one. He did it in 4 hours, 14 minutes and 39 seconds, which, you know, he averaged a pretty good pace. He stopped for pizza, hot dog, ice cream, a chocolate chip cookie. Sounds like a real nutritious meal there. But anyway, it was a fun thing to do. He said the toughest section was a few of the hilly sections we went through, but we kept it at a moderate pace and took additional breaks when needed. Running in the costume wasn't as bad as I was expecting. It was a warm day, but once I broke a sweat, it was fine. I was committed to the outfit. So now they're planning to do another Costco run in the city of Calgary, apparently. It's an interesting thing. So I thought, well, what is equivalent here? You know what I thought, right?
Yeah.
Dollar General. There's so many Dollar Generals. I looked it up, and from what I can tell, there are at least 13 Dollar Generals in Whitfield County.
Well, you know, back in my building days, we used to build Dollar Generals.
Yeah.
And their demographic rule is pretty simple. It's 500 households in a five-mile radius.
Yeah.
That's not hard to do.
No.
And their motto is they want to be everywhere Walmart's not.
Yeah.
And man, have they done it. They have succeeded here in Whitfield County.
Yes, they have.
I mean, there's one. You can almost see one from the other in some places here.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they are. They're close together. And they all seem to be busy.
Oh, yeah.
They've got people going in and out all day long.
And the crazy thing about, we won't get too far on Dollar General, but they're economy proof. So when the economy goes down, their revenue actually goes up because people are, they'll not want to drive. It's usually cheaper stuff. And
yeah.
So they're, man, they have a great business model for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't know. Maybe we plan a Dollar General run. We run from one Dollar General to the next to the whole, I wonder how far you'd have to run to get to every Dollar General in Whitfield County. Costco's, you know, are only in high population areas, so they're going to be, if you have more than one in a town, they would have to be fairly close together. Dollar Generals, though, are in the places where there is not as much population. So,
yeah, they want to be everywhere Walmart's not, which means out in the country.
Yeah, yeah, it would be interesting to do.
But, you know, now that you say that, I actually called, because I was kind of kicking around this harebrained idea one time. I wonder what it'd be like to walk every single road in Whitfield County.
Yeah.
And I called our guy at the county here and I said, hey, how many, and I can't remember the number now, but it was way less than what I thought.
Oh, really?
There's way less mileage of roads than I thought. It was well under 1,000 miles.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I would have thought it was a couple thousand at least, but it's not. It's way less than you think.
Whitfield County seems so big. You know, when you think about the south side of the county up to where I live in the northernmost part of the county, that's a long way.
Yeah, it is.
Huh.
That's what it really surprised me. I'll have to, I don't know if I wrote, I think I may have it on a text. I do have it on a text.
I think with all the subdivisions and places like that, that's a long way.
Yeah, I mean, this was the guy with the road department, so he's the one maintaining the roads. And he's like, yeah, he knew the exact number too. And I was like, really?
Wow. Yeah. That's an interesting thought.
Because I thought it would be cool to walk everywhere. Because what brought this up is there's apps now. There's an app that a guy created, and it's for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go walk, and it tracks what roads you've done on a map. And I just thought at one time that would be pretty cool to do.
Walk
every road in Whitfield County. It wasn't as impressive as I thought it was going to be either.
Yeah.
Not that I was trying to impress anybody, but I was thinking a couple thousand miles, that'd be pretty neat. The number didn't impress me.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Well, it is a time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. What is cheating? And why do people do it? Let's explore that topic today in this one called Modern Day Adam and Eve. At one time, I counted Lance Armstrong as a hero. He overcame cancer and came back to be the best cyclist in the world. Then he confessed to using performance-enhancing drugs, and he was knocked off that pedestal. Roger Clemens was a great major league pitcher for his entire career, and then he seemed to get even better when he turned 40. We later found out it was due to performance-enhancing drugs. Ditto for Barry Bonds as a hitter. There have been hundreds of runners who have been caught using performance-enhancing drugs, too. Every sport has its cheaters. So let's ask the question, why do they do it? Winning is glamorous. Winning is lucrative. Winning makes heroes. The draw of the bright lights is alluring, even if there is a chance of being plunged quickly into the darkness. Let's face it, there were probably more cyclists than we could shake a stick at that were dirty when Lance was caught. I'm sure there are athletes all over the world in almost every sport who have gotten away with it, and that's why some still do it. Let's take an issue aside from drug cheating and look at it. Plagiarism is a big deal in colleges across the country. I remember a very honest athlete that I coached a few years ago getting caught up in it. With AI, it is now really easy to do. It is really tempting to use AI to essentially write a paper for you. So the question is, why don't you do it? And the answer is simple. It's not right. But let's take it a step further. The truth is that today's businesses are using AI to do a lot of their work, including writing copy for them. So if college is meant to get you ready for the business world and the business world is using AI, what's wrong with learning to do what you might do after you graduate? Sounds a little grayer now, doesn't it? Most of us would still agree that it's wrong, but it's easy to see why people compromise themselves by reasoning things that should not be reasoned. For those of us with normal running abilities, we can't imagine wanting to take illegal shortcuts just to be successful. But think about the thing that you are passionate about. What if you could be the best in the world if you only did one little thing that wasn't quite the normal path? Add to that the excuse that everybody's doing it, and it's not hard to reason why some people fall on the bad side of the rules. It's the same thing that appealed to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. They had just a couple of rules to follow. The serpent came to them and made it sound like it's no big deal to bend a rule or two occasionally, and they did. That same human nature causes people all over the world to do things they should not do, including you and me. Not you? Have you ever driven a car over the speed limit? Whether you follow the rules of the world is your business, but following the rules of the Bible should be our number one priority. We see people justifying things that are forbidden in the Bible all the time. They cannot be justified. And again, we're almost all guilty. At one time, I justified my angry outbursts as God made me that way. It is wrong. Period. I am working hard to be better today, but if you are justifying things that are outside the bounds of the Bible, take a step back and think about what you are doing. You are justifying Adam and Eve's actions, and the Bible is clear. Those actions cannot be justified. Whether you are a professional athlete taking performance-enhancing drugs, or you're justifying your worry by thinking if you don't care enough, if you don't worry, If you're justifying your worry by thinking you don't care enough, if you don't worry, it is wrong. God will forgive us, but only if we're working hard to get over the burden we carry.
It's a great word, Dean.
Everybody has a different cross to bear, so to speak. You know, for me, it's been that the anger issue, which I've talked about a number of times here. But for many people, worry is an all-consuming thing. And yeah, people take that, and I use that on here because I see so many people that justify that by saying, well, if I'm not worried, then I don't care. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it any more right. Mm-mm. And I'm not saying we never worry about anything. We all sin. We all have things that we do, and we all have things we struggle with. But some people take it to an extreme, just like I have taken anger issues to an extreme. Mm-hmm. There's not a difference. But yet, I think that society takes something like worry, maybe another one like gluttony. Mm-hmm. And we look at those completely differently as if, well, those are kind of minor little mm-hmm. things. Whereas an angry outburst, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. No, they're all sins and they're all things we should be working on. And if we're not working to get better, we're not in the will of God for sure.
Sure. You're spot on.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to add to that. That's rare. No, I mean, I think you nailed it. We're so wired to justify our thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And throw stones at your thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. And we have to take a step back and we have to realize that it's worth working on that thing and getting better at that thing because the Bible commands us to.
Mm-hmm.
It just does. You know, when you think about running, I have literally thought, you know, I'm at the top of my game for my age group.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be 60 next month. I'm one of the best 60-year-old runners in the country, mm-hmm. if not the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I could take performance-enhancing drugs. Maybe I could be the best mm-hmm. in the world at what I do if I would just do something that's, there's a lot of other people doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it would be wrong. Now, when I say I've thought about it just from a standpoint of, you know, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've never thought, man, that would be cool if I could get sure. my hands on some of that stuff because it's just wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't want to cheat to get there. It's like I remember people have said to me my whole life, you know, somebody that I'm trying to chase down, that I'm trying to beat, that I'm having a hard time catching. Then they'll say something like, I'll trip them when they come by. I'm like, no, I want to beat them fair and square.
Yeah,
you know, I know they're kidding and all of that. But the idea is I want to beat you straight up. Mm-hmm. That's when it counts.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's kind of the way that I've looked at it. I was listening recently to Chad Wright on the Joe Rogan show. I'm not advocating for the Rogan show because, you know, he uses some language and stuff in there. But he was telling this story about how he was by a friend's side that was dying
mm-hmm.
and pancreatic cancer. And he was talking about how well he faced death. And I thought that was he was facing his own shortcomings in being with this person. But the idea that when things are tough, instead of trying to cheat, instead of trying to find shortcuts, just face what you got going on and move on, I think it was a good point. And when people know that you're a worrier and you're able to get rid of that feeling, let's say you're a big time worrier or you're whatever the thing is, and you're able to get past that and not be that worrier anymore,
mm-hmm.
and you say, God did that,
mm-hmm.
imagine what an impact that makes. It's a huge impact. You know, I think it's a big impact when I say, my anger issues are way better than they used to be. The reason is because God has made me better.
Yeah.
And it makes a big impact. And that's what we should be striving for.
Again, it's taking something that used to be, despising the shame of it.
Yeah.
And using it to glorify God. You know, it's just like I say with the whole running ministry. I wasn't that great of a runner.
Mm.
Which is... I mean, there were times I struggled with that. I really did. I struggled with God. What do they call it? Imposter syndrome?
Yeah.
Of, I'm not that great of a runner. I mean, Dean is now teaching this. What am I even doing here? Or I'm teaching my second ever class and Mark Yoho is sitting in front of me.
Mm.
Who's knows scripture backward and forwards and preaches combat evangelism, which is what I call it. What? Who am I? No, I learned. It took a long time to understand that maybe God has me here because there is no way I can take credit for this. Mm. And I have never once taken credit for that. That would be foolish of me.
Yeah.
To try to take credit for this. And that's why I feel like God puts people in certain places sometimes is for that reason, because the testimony is all that more powerful. God, why did you allow this thing to happen in my past? I think many times it's so he can use it now.
Yep.
But many times we're trying to hide it, push it down. I don't want to talk about that. I'm ashamed to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
There should be no shame in your testimony.
Amen.
Yeah.
At Upward Sports, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey, but we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. You can sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you helpful tips of the day and finish with an encouraging quote in each episode. You must be an Upward Running member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. This week, it makes checkups better. You know, I've been getting my results back from having some blood work done. And obviously my blood work is better than most people. Mm-hmm. And it feels good to see that. Being a runner means doing something good for your body. But even more than that, it makes me want to fuel my body better. To think about what I'm putting in and then measuring these things and trying to get better at it, just like I do in my running. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get better at my health, and it makes a big difference. And so the app told me I'm biologically, my biological age is 12 years less than my actual age. What was yours?
Mine said 32, so that would be 15 years.
15 years, yeah. Debbie was 12 years too, so...
But yet my cholesterol was high, so I don't understand how they square that. I'm still bitter.
There's a lot
about
of younger
my
folks
whole cholesterol thing. Yeah. Although I'm working on it.
Yeah.
The story's still to come.
Yeah.
For those of you who have reached out to me and said, "Okay, when are you going to tell your story about your health journey and nutrition and all this?" Probably in December.
Yeah.
Which is when I'll get my next round of labs, and that'll be 1 year. That I've been on this journey. I've already got my lab scheduled for December. So it'll be sometime after that.
Of course
that.
You do.
Yeah. What, Dean? You don't have yours scheduled? With the app, you can go ahead and schedule it right now. I know what app you're using.
I'm not even thinking about it.
Of course you're not.
It would be good. That would be good. Yeah.
So as we're about to go into this next section, you know, you and I, we were on our sister podcast yesterday, which is the Kind of Fast podcast, which Claire and Travis do. Great podcast. You need to go check it out. But were you surprised that I was studied up on the track championships?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I had some commentary there,
you
didn't
did.
I? Although it wasn't much.
I was impressed.
I had at least watched the highlights.
Yeah, yeah, which is good. The highlights are the fun part anyway, right? That's why they're called highlights.
I mean, it's the only part. I'm not sitting and watching that all day long. You got to be crazy to do that.
Oh, you know, watching the highlights is like watching a recorded football game. It's like, I want to see it while it's happening. I don't want to see it later.
I don't see it that way, Dean.
Yeah. No, I know you don't. So we did have the USA Championships. There's a couple of races that I thought were just fantastic. First was the 1500 meters, the men's 1500 meters. Best event in track and field, hands down, in my opinion, the 1500 meters is great. The 1500 meters or the mile, they're close to the same. There's 109 meters difference between the two. If you don't remember, last year in the Olympics, we had in the United States, we had the first, third, and fifth place finishers in the Olympics. And that was Cole Hawker, Jared Naguse, and Hobbs Kessler. Well, you would assume those three guys being the top five in the world just this past year, they would, and they're all healthy. Mm-hmm. They would all probably, that would probably be the team that we would send to world championships. Au contraire. Only one of them made it back. Mm-hmm. And that was Cole Hawker, and he finished third. He's the Olympic champion, finished third just in the U.S. championship.
Let me ask you something, because I did watch that race. And I know this probably isn't the case, but it appeared that way. And even the commentators were talking about how comfortable he looked.
Yeah.
Do you think there was? I feel like he was okay with third, at least in the last 100. It's almost like, because he kind of looked over his shoulder and he was like, "I got this," which seems so out of character for somebody like that in a race of that level. But the goal of that race is to earn a spot to the world championships. You think there was some of that?
I do. I think he looked at that as more of a qualifying race.
Okay.
And because
and the other two were just running their guts out.
Well, those were the only races the other two were running, right. Whereas Cole had the 5K coming up.
Right.
And so I think that's, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. So I think Cole still has a good shot at winning world championships. But Jonah Coetsch is the guy that won. Ethan Strand was second. Both of them ran PRs to get there. Kessler and Neguse were fourth and fifth, and that was it was a surprise. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Everybody thought Neguse and Hocker would make it. There were some people who thought Kessler might not make it, but nobody saw two of them not make it, especially Neguse. So it was interesting. And then in the 800, the most astounding running performance I think I've ever seen. Just incredible. Debbie probably thought he's going crazy. I was jumping off the couch and because I was really excited that Donovan Brazier was winning the 800. Donovan Brazier has been through a lot. He was a 2019 world champion. And ever since then, he's gone through one setback after another, and he's never made it back to the world stage. Well, he wound up winning. And as he's coming down the straightaway, I am really excited for Donovan Brazier because Donovan Brazier is a good guy. There's, you know, he's not one of those guys you root against. But I was really excited that he had fully come back. But then I look up and I notice that there's this guy streaking into second place, just blowing by everybody. And it was Cooper Lutkenhaus. The 16-year-old high school kid, and
I'm a big fan.
Yes, and he was genuinely surprised. Seemed to be just really excited about what he was doing. Just seemed to be a good kid. 16 years old.
He's the antithesis of what's his name?
Noah Lyles.
Yeah, Noah Lyles.
Yeah.
He's the opposite. He seems like really humble. Maybe because of his age. I hope he stays this way. But I watched the interview with him, and he's just like kind of the aw shucks, and it's genuine. It's not like put on.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, because it had to be surreal to him. I mean, he's been running at a high level for a while now, but to do what he did, it had to be a pinch me moment. For him, even. Because, I mean, you could tell when he came through, it was like, what did I just do?
Yeah. You could tell.
Yeah.
It was great. It was great. Now, it'll be interesting to see how he follows it up. But, again, the amazing thing about this is that I said this on the other podcast, I think. I said, think about all the thousands of 800-meter races that have been run over the years in high school. There have been tens of thousands of 800-meter races run. And not only is he the fastest of all those tens of thousands of races that have been run, but he's 4 seconds faster than the next fastest guy.
Yeah.
And that guy was good enough that his record stood for 29 years before Cooper came and broke it. That's just astounding. And on top of that, he's 16. He's not 18 like most of the fastest guys on that list.
Right.
So just incredible. So Be rooting. If you're going to watch the world championships, be rooting for Cooper Lutkenhaus. I would love to see him. Of course, I'd love to see the other two guys do well, too. Bryce Hopple finished third, along with, what's his name that finished first that I just was talking about?
I mean, think about Brazier. What it's like for him. I mean, I think he's starting his junior year this week. In high school.
Yeah.
Think about what it's like going to school this week.
Yeah. You know what I think would add to his legend? Be if he ran a cross-country race before he ran in the world championships. Think about it.
Yeah.
He would run a junior high school cross-country race.
Is that allowed? We've talked about this before.
Yes.
Because he's running professional now.
Well, he's running in professional races, but you're allowed to do that.
Okay. Because I thought... For some reason, I thought we talked about a rule or somebody did that.
There are some states that don't allow it.
Oh, okay.
There are some states. Michigan does not allow.
Because we talked about
that.
One kid where he knew that was the rule. He did it anyway. Then he got disqualified or wasn't allowed to run the state meet. And we were trying to determine whether that's right or wrong. So there are states that that is the
yes.
rule, but not Texas. But Cooper, Texas.
Yeah, but Cooper is from the free state of Texas.
Yeah.
So our trivia question from this week, I think this is an interesting one. We have talked about the coldest and hottest marathons. We've talked about the highest marathon. But what is the lowest marathon in the world? And that's measured from ground level. Mm. The lowest marathon in the world. This is a surprising answer. You'll love it. We'll talk about it next week. If you know the answer to it, you can send the answer to dean@upward.org. And if you're a member, you'll win $20 off in the store.
So, I have two in my head.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're right or not.
No, they're not.
In about 5 minutes.
They're not.
They're not?
They're not, right.
Okay.
Yeah. I had never heard of this before. So
really?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's brand new.
That's the hint.
Yes. Yes. Huh. Our motivational thought comes from Usain Bolt. He said, dreams are free. Goals have a cost. While you can daydream for free, goals don't come without a price. Time, effort, sacrifice, and sweat. How will you pay for your goals?
I love Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
He did sprinting right as far as the mentality and the personality.
He did.
He was very confident, wasn't cocky.
Yep.
And it was all fun. To him.
Yeah, we were on the, if you listen to our bonus podcast, you'll hear this. We'll have already heard this, but Lane brought up, I've always said, Lane always says something profound. I thought this was really good. He said that to him, what Noah Lyles does is a show, and he's an actor, and he's putting on this show. What Usain Bolt did was Usain Bolt just being Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
And I thought,
how did that podcast go? I didn't even ask you about it.
Yeah, it went well.
Yeah.
It went well. It went longer than I thought it would, but it
really?
Was good. Yeah.
And it was all about
the U.S. Championships.
Yep. Yeah. So tune into that. So you had Lane, and then you Patton. Had the other, the running nerd of high school. Patton, you could quiz him on anything.
Yep. Yeah.
And he would know the answer. Yep. So I'm excited to hear that. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It's already out. If you're listening to this, it was out before this one. So,
but it's not out as of this.
As of this minute.
It's not.
It is not.
Okay. When's it coming out?
This evening.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I'll listen to it.
Yeah. All right. So don't use excuses not to check off your workouts. That's what Usain Bolt's saying here. There are legitimate excuses to miss a run or to miss a workout or whatever, but make sure they're legitimate excuses. Don't. It's too hot out there. That's not an excuse. You know, I don't feel like it today. Not an excuse.
Yeah.
Just get out there and get it done.
A right? goal is a dream with work clothes on.
That's right. I like that. Yep. Very good. All right. Well, join Upward Run Club if you haven't done that. Download the app. Start using it. It's getting better all the time. Again, if you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, do all those things. And
if you've been waiting on the guided workouts, I actually tested that 2 days ago. It's pretty awesome. I mean, it is really your music or whatever you're listening to. You can do that and you hear the prompts. It's the prompts. As of right now, this first one is me coming in and just kind of giving some commentary, and I don't like to hear myself, but the technology is pretty amazing how they're able to do that. I mean, these guys in our IT department are just mind-blowing.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be cool. So check it out. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.